In Australia, it costs over $4.8 billion in healthcare costs per year. So low back pain can affect anyone from children through to older people.
That's Dr. Craig Moore. He's a PhD student in the Faculty of Health at UTS and chiropractor at Crow's Nest Chiropractic Centre.
And in fact, the most common cause of low back pain tends to relate to how we inadvertently place pressure and load on our discs or our joints. So we call these biomechanical risks or biomechanical risk factors that will lead to a sudden episode of acute low back pain. So I guess I'm mostly talking about prolonged sitting, bending, twisting the back, or awkward postures, or heavy manual activities, those sorts of biomechanical risk factors that put an inappropriate load on our discs or joints. And then there's other individual risks as well that can further increase an individual person's risk, and that might relate to their age or if they're overweight or if they've got poor health and poor fitness, those sorts of risks, as well as whether they've had previous episodes of low back pain, that would increase their personal risk as well.
Craig says that in most cases, low back pain doesn't indicate an underlying problem.
The most common episode is just a mixture of physical circumstances, either at the time of the back attack or physical loads or circumstances that build up over time that can kind of reach a threshold, and in the end you have a spinal joint or a spinal disc that gives out, sort of like the straw that breaks the camel's back. That sort of scenario can kind of creep up on an individual. Having said that, most cases there's no really underlying problem, but there are rarer cases where there could be, after a physical examination and a history, one might suspect there is an underlying problem, but that is less often. And it's in situations, for example, where there's been a physical trauma, you might be suspecting a fracture in the back, or there might be a history of cancer and you may need to look into whether this is a complication of a cancer.
But sometimes the problem is when the pain becomes much more intense. This is called chronic pain. And for those who experience chronic low back pain, it can be incredibly unpleasant.
So a percentage of people who have an acute episode of low back pain, they can go on to suffer chronic low back pain. So that's defined as low back pain that's lasted for 3 months or more. So we would call that chronic low back pain. Some people go on to have recurrent low back pain, which means they continue to have relapses of shorter episodes. So those are the more complex cases and the more challenging ones. So while the average person, their low back pain might typically resolve within a matter of weeks, with or without a minimum amount of treatment, some people go on to suffer ongoing chronic low back pain, and they're the more challenging cases.
As Craig has said, many seek treatment to deal with the burden of low back pain. There are a number of options, all depending on the severity of the pain experienced. This could be a short course of spinal manipulation with a chiropractor, certain prescriptions, or even encouragement to stay upright and active as opposed to laying down. However, Craig says there are a few myths to debunk when it comes to treating low back pain.
We've learnt now that paracetamol is quite ineffective in the treatment of acute low back pain and with people with osteoarthritis in general. There was a major study published fairly recently in the British Medical Journal, which did a review of all of the research that was looking at how effective Panadol was for acute low back pain, and they found it was no better than placebo. In other words, no better than a sugar pill. So one of the things we're learning is that simple painkillers can often be rather ineffective.
And not only are paracetamols ineffective for treating low back pain, according to Craig, x-rays are unnecessary too.
And that's been a challenge because many of the guidelines now are encouraging doctors and chiropractors and physiotherapists to really hold back on imaging, whether it's x-rays or MRI scans. For the fairly common type of low back pain, x-rays, for example, are very unhelpful. They don't tend to change the type of treatment that's going to be offered. They don't tend to provide information that will change the type of treatment that you're likely to be offered. And so this is a challenge. It's been a challenge for changing the habits of doctors and chiropractors and physios who may in the past have very frequently referred a patient for an x-ray. And it's also a challenge for a lot of the public who walk into the office of a healthcare professional and they're sort of expecting that they'll have an x-ray and thinking that they need an x-ray, and sometimes we have to even convince the patient that they don't need an x-ray, and it's likely to be unhelpful for most cases of low back pain.
Craig Moore, chiropractor and PhD student in the UTS Faculty of Health. Any experience of pain can dramatically alter your behaviour. If the pain extends over a period of time, you can become antsy, frustrated, upset, or even depressed. Toby Newton-John is a senior lecturer and clinical psychologist at the UTS Graduate School of Health. He says that pain and emotion are more closely linked than you think.
The best way to start thinking about that one is to sort of go back and think of, you know, what's the purpose of pain? Why do we have pain? Of course, that relates to this sort of evolutionary idea that pain is a way of alerting us to the fact that something is going wrong in our body somewhere, or potentially going wrong, and that we need to do something about it. So it's got two components. One is the detection component, that your brain perceives that there's something happening in your body which is not good for it. And then secondly, that your brain kind of motivates you to get away from that input or that source or that kind of noxious stimulation, as it's called. In some cases, very rapid. If you put your hand, you know, accidentally on the stove or against the hot iron, you know, your hand comes off that stove before you've even almost registered that it touched it. But if the long-term pain, this pain that goes on day after day, if the person isn't able to get away from that pain, if they're not able to find a treatment that fixes it or it doesn't go away by itself, you start to get the picture of where the psychological distress around pain starts, because in effect, you have a brain which is telling you constantly, you need to do something to make this pain stop. And the person very often is doing their very best to try, and they're seeing all the doctors and taking the tablets and doing all the treatments, but it's not stopping. There's a fundamental frustration there with a sort of an evolutionary mechanism saying, you know, you need to get this thing to stop, you need to get away from the pain, and yet the person, despite their best efforts, isn't able to get away from the pain. That's what often starts the sort of psychological component.
Finding a way to deal with both the physical pain and emotional strain of chronic lower back pain, Toby says, isn't all black and white.
My sense is that most would say, in answer to that question, they would say, if somebody can fix my pain problem, that in itself will take away all the psychological difficulties that I have. The frustration, the depression, the lack of sleep, the irritability, the anxiety about the future, all of those emotions are related to my daily experience of pain. And if that can be fixed for me, the other difficulties will sort of fall away. So people do tend to look for a fairly straightforward biological approach. You know, they have an operation, or they have an injection of some kind, or they have some kind of medication or medication combination. And if those treatments work, that's fabulous. And if that gets rid of that pain, all well and good. But unfortunately, for about 20% of the adult population, their pain doesn't go away. It's a persistent problem. For that group, about 10% of them are really significantly disabled by their pain. And this is where we get into kind of tricky treatment territory, because if somebody's had chronic pain for 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, and despite that passage of time and reasonable sort of attempts to treat it, they still have the pain, it gets less and less likely that there's actually going to be a curative option for them. And that's where a sort of multidisciplinary approach, where there's support around some of the biological options there, but also support for managing the pain as an ongoing problem, is the ideal version.